You seek the key, but first you must learn the ways of precision, craft, and performance with Acura's all-electric ZDX. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system, up to a 313-mile range, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is their most powerful SUV yet. Unlock the energy when you visit Acura.com to order yours today.
At the UPS Store, we know things can get busy this upcoming holiday. You can count on us to be open and ready to help with any packing and shipping or anything else you might need.
Is there anything you can't do?
Actually, I don't have a good singing voice. The UPS... Nope. But our certified packing experts can pack and ship just about anything.
At least that's good.
The UPS Store. Be unstoppable. Most locations are independently owned. Product, services, pricing, and hours of operation may vary. See center for details. Come in today to get your holiday goodies there on time.
This isn't your average business podcast, and he's not your average host. This is the James Altucher Show on the Choose Yourself Network. Today on the James Altucher Show.
I don't like the word life hacks. It sounds kind of cheesy, like, yeah. Oh, if I do this, I'm going to manipulate all these people. But I do think there is something to be said for making little tweaks to optimize your life, to make it a little better. And there are people who've had a lot of experience at different types of ways of living life. And if you can benefit in small ways from that, then do it. So I'm going to go straight to the next one, which is called the advice hack. And I've used this hack a lot, and I'm almost afraid to talk about it because I'm afraid I won't be able to use it again after I talk about it. Because people will say, oh, you're using the advice hack. And or I'll tell you a situation where it's worked with my kids. So my oldest daughter, unfortunately, goes to college. And I was very much against it. I've even written a book, 40 Alternatives to College. And I've written a ton of articles about student loan debt and so forth. But whenever I used to try to talk to her about it, she would literally, if I would say to her, listen, we got to talk about college and your alternatives, she would just literally turn around and walk away. And so I had to change the way I talked to her about it. And I had to say, look, give me advice on how I can talk to you about education. Yeah. Like, what would be a way where you wouldn't walk away? And so even though it did end up that she was going to college, we were able to have many discussions about it, and she's always aware of her alternatives. So, and it also gives her fuel for her to talk to me about it if she has problems in school or whatever. So,
what made you do that? Were you at your wit's end?
No. I realized, look, she's an adult, and when she's 28 or 29 years old and having a serious problem, I mean, the older you get, the more serious the issues you could have. I want her to feel comfortable talking to me. I didn't want her to think I was her enemy.
Yeah.
And that was high stakes enough for me that I used the advice hack. It only really works in high stakes situations. You know, if you're going to be working with somebody or dealing with someone in a high stakes situation, it's not like you versus them. Saying the word advice implies you're working together.
In the words of Pitbull, the rapper, he says, ask for money and get advice. Ask for advice, get money twice. So there is a way.
Yeah. Okay, back for part two of the 1 Minute Life Hacks podcast with Steve Cohen. Steve, what did you think of the other life hacks?
I thought it was really good.
Have you started using them?
I did start using them.
What have you done?
I definitely like the idea. I haven't stolen any of your waiter's pads, but I do like that idea. So I used to use spiral notebooks that were really big, and I have to steal some waiter's pad. But I at least got down to a smaller notebook, like kind of like a small spiral kind of thing.
But the thing with the spiral is you have to fit in. You can't fit it in your pocket.
Yes.
And when the spiral unwinds, it
no, but I was talking about even like a small like note index card. But again, waiter's pad is the way to be. I have to do that. And I'm going to go to your apartment and take some.
I got a little pad right now.
So I'm going to be a Rockefeller. Give it to me.
I got a list on it.
Yeah, give it to me. It's a collector's item. I could put on eBay. That was one. And I know I was trying to think of some of the other things that we had said. I know that the life hacks that I talked about, I continue to do.
Like what?
I definitely am careful about the words I use. And so if somebody emails me and says, I'm running 10 minutes late. I'm not like, no problem, because I don't want to throw in the word problem.
Yeah.
You know, if
you know what, I use that one as well. Have we ever talked about this? I think we've talked about this.
We might have talked about it on Friday.
I don't like saying no problem because it's not, there's no problems anymore.
Yeah, exactly.
And so language is important.
Yeah, 100%.
You know, there's a TED talk about this where I forgot the name of the
TED
woman.
TED talk about everything.
But there, she describes this indigenous culture. I don't know what indigenous means, but it's, you know, they've never had contact with civilization and they have no words for left and right. They only have words for north, south, east, west. So for instance, if they see a fly, they'll say, oh, there's a fly that's south, southeast from you, like right next to you.
Oh, wow.
And
that's interesting.
And it turns out because that's their language, that they're actually much more aware of where the directions north, south, east, west are than humans previously thought possible for humans. So some animals are very attuned to north, south, east, west, but we think, we always explain it like, oh, there's magnets in their beaks or whatever. But humans could be just as attuned. It's just a matter of the language they use.
Absolutely. And I think many people have talked about the inherent biases in language, whether it's sexist, where the word hysterical comes from uterus, or people say for a lot
of words, hysterical comes from uterus.
Yeah. And so the implication is that, oh, women are, you know, more emotional. And so there's a lot of words like that. And I think, we have to be careful about the words we use and not too mealy mouthed or timid about it, but I think mindful.
So we have a couple of life hacks today that very directly involve use of language as life hacks. But first I want to ask our audio engineer, do you hear some kind of reverb when we're talking?
No, not really.
I kind of hear an extra sound.
I don't hear any reverb.
And by the way, keep this in the podcast, this Ashley, because every podcast is raw, the Wild West. Doesn't need to be edited out.
It's unfiltered.
Do you still hear reverb?
No, now it's gone.
Yeah, it's from it's from the headphones.
Okay.
Yeah. And then I muted the headphones, so you don't hear yourself anymore.
Okay. So, wanna dive right in?
Yeah, we're excited. Thank you, Jay. By the way, for muting the headphones. Thank you, Jay, for muting the headphones.
No problem.
it's a very hard skill, you know.
Yeah.
So, this next rule is supposedly from Warren Buffett. I think actually there is some argument about the origin. It might not be from Warren Buffett, but it's called the 525 rule. And I found this to be immensely valuable for me about a year ago. Like, I was starting to accumulate so many things that I was doing in my life. Like, I wanted to write a novel. I wanted to do stand-up comedy. I was running a business. I was in the business itself. There were many different products. I was doing a podcast. And my interests were getting to be too big, and I was trying to figure out how do I slim down my life, because minimalism is not just about the items you carry around in your bag, but the items you carry around in your head. And I was getting too stressed out even on things that I love doing. So this is called the 525 rule, and again, it's attributed to Warren Buffett, but I don't know if that's true. And he says basically, list the top 25 things you love to do. 25. Like, make it as big a list as possible. 25 things. And then make two columns. On your right, put your first five. On your left, put your first five. And put the next 20 to your right. And then here's the interesting thing. Never, never, never look at the things on the right list again. And it's interesting, because people say, oh, only attend to the bottom 20 after you do the first five. No, his whole point is any time you spend on the bottom 20, even though they might be things you love doing, because they're in your top 25 thing, out of the billion things you could be doing in life, these are the top 25, so all 25 of them are important to you. Any time you spend on the bottom 20 as opposed to the top five will take away time you could have been spending on the top five, and you only can achieve excellence in so many things, and let's say five things. So his whole point is, never let yourself be distracted from the top five, even if it's by other things that you love.
No, I absolutely agree. No, I think that we all have a hard time doing that because what seems urgent we think is important. And I think, I also think somebody like Atul Gawande has popularized the idea of a list, you know, and it really helped efficiency in hospitals. And he talked about the checklist for surgeons, and even their efficiency got so much better. So I do think you manage what you monitor. So if it's there for you in front of you and you could see it, maybe you're more aware of what you're spending your time on. And I found that since I began working with you, it's very important for me to say, okay, thankfully when you're with entrepreneurs who have an entrepreneurial mindset and are very creative, you have a lot of opportunities, and we have to say, okay, what's really worthy of our time and effort, and what do we really want to do? What do we really want to accomplish? So I definitely agree with what Warren Buffett has to say. And, you know, I obviously, if it's not him, he's pretty successful anyway, so you might as well peg it on him.
Well, yeah. And, you know, it kind of also brings to light, like, you can't, you know, obviously on my top five has to be, and I know on your top five is family.
Yeah.
So things had to drop for me. Like I had to be, in order to basically prioritize, you know, relationships and family. And then of course, you know, business is how, you know, I feed my family, and this podcast is important to me. It kind of left room for only really one other thing. And I had to choose between, let's say, writing, comedy, you know, certain types of investing that required more of my time. So all of these things were on my bottom 20. And, you know, I had to figure out exactly what the top five was going to be. And it was hard for me. And even then I had to slim down to make sure I wasn't getting overloaded with any one of these things too much. Because if you get, there's definite truth to being spread too thin. Also, there's that saying, you know, you're the average of the five people around you. You're also the average of the five things you spend the most amount of time on, not the average of the 25 things. If you're the average of the 25 things you spend your most time on, you end up being nothing.
Right. Well, it's like I was going to say, you know, if you don't stand for something, you fall for anything. And if you have certain things that you're kind of like inviolable, you're going to be better off. And we all have to recognize that you can't please everybody. And, you know, people have said like the secret, I don't know the secret of success, but the secret of failure is trying to please everybody. So sometimes when you're venturing down to numbers 20 through 25, maybe you're doing it for other people's.
Or 5 through 25.
Yeah, 5 through 25. Yeah, 100%. Yeah, I was definitely going to go down lower on the list. And
you have a lot of interest then.
But I also think, and I know Susie Walsh had written a book called 10, 10, and 10, and I believe it was something to the effect, like, let me think about things and say, is it going to matter 10 minutes from now? Is it going to matter 10 months from now, 10 years from now? And I do think we can all look back and say, you know, I was really worked up over that, and it really wasn't worthy of my time. And obviously, it's better to have foresight than hindsight, and sometimes it is good to say, okay, it's not what you want, it's what you're willing to give up. And sometimes you have to give up stuff to get stuff that's more important. You know, so
You know, that's interesting. And I also, I haven't read her 10, 10, 10. I imagine the things that are important 10 years from now are really not so important, because you might be dead 10 years from now. You in particular, you know, with your diet. Just kidding.
Or Jay will kill me. You know, one too many insults to Jay. Hair trigger temper. I think it could also mean that, okay, you're always going to have your family. So if I read a review of, you just conducted a great interview with Mike Ovitz, and I read a review of his book, and it said that he was talking about how he really enjoyed his girlfriend or fiance's teenage daughter, and maybe implicit in that admission is that maybe he wasn't as present earlier with his children when they were that same age. So you'll never regret, you know, spending time with your children or, you know, or your parents or your family or your relatives. I mean, some of my relatives I might regret spending time with, but I think, I think you'll always appreciate it. I know it's cliche. It won't be the first cliche I've said. It won't be the last one. But people on their deathbed are kind of like, oh, I was glad I was able to spend so much time with, you know, people, you know, because they're not going to be around forever. So I think, Yes. I heard Warren Buffett, though. I did hear Warren Buffett talk about seizing the moment, and he gave a speech where he talked about, okay, you guys are, he was speaking to a group of 20-year-olds or, you know, college students, and he said, no, a lot of people put off a lot of things, and, you know, having fun or being promiscuous even or having relationships, and do you want to wait till you're having trouble with those same organs, you know, or do you want to do them now? Do you want to appreciate, you know, your vitality and when you're most vital? So I think these are very helpful.
I like also the idea of combining Atul Gawande's checklist technique. You know, I think that book's The Checklist Manifesto.
Yeah.
And kind of, if you have your top five, to actually make sure you really are doing them and improving them.
Yeah.
Like maybe not once a day, but maybe every week. How did I improve in the five things that I love doing the most? Because otherwise, what's the point of having in your top five if you're not kind of pursuing them and exploring their nuances and subtleties and improving at them?
Yeah, and I know you do that. And I think you're probably irritable when you don't get a chance to do it. You know, I've watched your comedy improve, I don't want to say tenfold, but it's gotten a lot better because you've worked on it and what you measure
improves.
You're
saying I sucked before?
No, because 10 times zero would be zero. You know, but I think that you worked at it, and your writing obviously got a lot better over the years. I mean, since I've known you, you've always been a very strong writer. I think, and those are important to you. Look, it's often said that people will judge you by the decisions you make. So if you decide to get up and perform comedy three or four times a week, or write something, or go to dinner with this person, and you give up a lot of things. You give up quite a number of things. You go to the opening of every envelope, like where you could. You work on your craft, and that's what you need to do.
So the next hack, I think this is also a Warren Buffett one, actually.
Maybe it was Charlie Munger. He probably stole the idea from.
I'm gonna skip this one, actually. I don't like that one as much. I'm gonna go straight to the next one, which is I call the advice hack.
Yeah.
So this one is I've used this hack a lot, and I'm almost afraid to talk about it because I'm afraid I won't be able to use it again after I talk about it. Because people will say, oh, you're using the advice hack. And
nobody wants to feel manipulated.
Well, and it's not even a manipulative one. It's like often, I'll give you a classic example. Let's say you're negotiating against someone who's an expert negotiator. Like,
sure.
Let's say you're selling a company and they bought 1,000 companies. And the first thing they say to you is like, well, what do you want for your company?
Right.
And I don't know, they're like a grandmaster at this. Like,
sure.
If a grandmaster chess player plays a chess player straight off the street, there's zero chance he's going to lose. There's a 1,000% chance he's going to win. And so a grandmaster negotiator is not going to lose against, you know, someone who's never negotiated
sure.
before. And by lose, it doesn't mean the person who, in a good negotiation, both sides will feel like they've won. So that's what will happen is the loser will feel like he's won, but actually did not get what he wanted, what he could have gotten in the long term. So often in a negotiation, the grandmaster negotiator might say, I'm not saying this is a good technique or a bad technique, but I'm just segueing into the advice hack. But the grandmaster negotiator might sit down and say, so what's the value of your company? What do you want me to pay? And this is where the advice hack kicks in. I always reply, listen, and I'll use the grandmaster analogy. You're the grandmaster of this. I'm really just focused on my business. I have been for years. I built it up. I have no idea what it is, what it's like negotiating these things. You negotiate all the time. If you were to give someone like me advice on what to say now, what advice would you give?
Right.
And so I mean it very sincerely because I do think I only would say it to someone who I think has higher skills and status than me in that area. And usually I find when you say that, it brings them, they really do want to give good advice. They don't want to give you bad advice. So it kind of helps the negotiation along.
Yeah, and in part one of the Life Hacks podcast, we talked about the cognitive biases. And right, you're flattering that person. You're showing humility. I mean, there's a lot of reasons that person wants to help you. And I remember similar to that is how you conduct yourself. And I think I remember people always felt like in order to have a lot of influence, you had to do a lot of favors for people, like the Godfather, and always go out of your way. And a lot of times people will say, ask somebody for a favor, like, or ask advice. You know, like, I know that whenever I've helped somebody, I might have helped somebody get an internship or a job, and you've certainly helped a lot of people. Chase helped nobody. But I think that when you've done that, you feel a sense of obligation, like you invested in them. So you're making sure he's invested in it. And you're also testing him, too. You're testing him to say, well, what I would do, James, is your company's only worth like $5. They're not going to say that.
What you're referring to there is related to this. Do you know and I think we've spoken about it before on the podcast, but the Benjamin Franklin hack, which is where Benjamin Franklin was a young state legislator in Pennsylvania, and he had an enemy. Somebody, a much older legislator, didn't like him, and Benjamin Franklin simply did this. He said, can I borrow a book from you? Maybe we even talked about this on the last podcast.
Oh, no, I don't think so. No.
But Benjamin Franklin said, can I borrow a book from you? And the guy was surprised and said, oh, sure. And he gave Benjamin Franklin the book. And a week later, Benjamin Franklin returned the book. And the guy was friends with Benjamin Franklin for the rest of their careers. And the reason is there's a cognitive bias. If you do something for someone, your brain is telling or your body is telling your brain, hey, I'm the type of person who does something for this person. So that older guy was saying, I'm the type of person who lends Ben Franklin books. I don't lend anyone else books. I lend Ben Franklin books.
Yeah.
So you start to be more nicely inclined in other areas. So this advice hack is similar to that. You're kind of letting them do a favor for you. Now, it happens to be a favor in a high-stakes situation, like a negotiation, or I'm sure you could think of other, it could be a high-stakes situation like asking for a promotion or asking for a salary increase or doing a sale. You visit someone. And I've seen this happen very successfully in a sales situation. I was in a meeting where it was one company selling to this huge, massive Chinese company. The guys from China flew in on a blizzard in their private jet, and we're all sitting around this conference room, and the meeting went horribly. It was the worst possible meeting you could imagine. And one guy on the team, actually, he's been on this podcast before, Scott Cohen, one guy on the team said, okay, this meeting obviously didn't go well. What advice could you give us so that we could take the next step and this meeting could go move forward? And then once he said that, everything, the tension kind of subsided. Like the guy from China wasn't yelling at us anymore. And the tension subsided. And the guy said, well, if you could show us this, this, and this, then we'll move forward. And suddenly,
you violated that last hack we talked about, is getting rid of your phone.
I know. That's because I'm using it as my hotspot today.
I bet your priorities. No, that shows
We're doing the podcast at WeWork, so I didn't know I correctly knew I would need a hotspot here. Yeah. But WeWork is great for providing the podcast facility, and this is an amazing space, but I just wanted to make sure I had a backup hotspot.
Yeah.
So I didn't answer the phone,
Yes, exactly.
So that was a case of using the advice hack in a sales situation that basically saved a major high stakes situation.
I think
where in relationships do you think that might work?
About being on, I think it works in a lot of the ways that you're talking about. Like, it's that if you're having a relationship with somebody, and rather than you try and come up with all the solutions, saying, okay, what would you want to do? And
yeah,
that
like
empowers them rather than, oh, you don't do this, you don't do that. Like, hey, where would you want to go? What would you like to do? What would be the outcome you want? And after a while, if they're not as forthcoming, same way with a guy in a deal with you, if they're not as forthcoming, you think maybe they're the wrong partner for you.
I have to say, Airbnb has changed my life. I just love staying in Airbnbs. Like, in about a month, I'm going to Cocoa Beach, which is right next to Cape Canaveral. I'm going to watch some rocket launches. I'm going to, of course, be staying in a very nice Airbnb on the beach. And it's just such a great experience. Like, the whole world is available to us now because of Airbnb. But whenever I'm at an Airbnb, I always realize, you know, the home that I left to come to this Airbnb, I could be making money on that right now by hosting and being an Airbnb myself. So, and I've known people, I had a friend who basically, you know, made a living from turning his home into an Airbnb. So if you have a home, but you're not always at home, you do have an Airbnb there. And it can easily fit into your lifestyle, and it's a great way to earn some money. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. I remember last year I was asked to go speak at the Norway Business Summit, and I was so excited because side by side with the Business Summit was the Norway Chess Summit, where I would get to see in person Magnus Carlsen, the best chess player ever, playing chess. But it was 4 plane rides, like, to get to the city that ultimately I would go to. So I really did not want to fly for 14 hours. And they were willing to pay for everything for me. So I at first class. So I didn't want to fly for 14 hours and not be first class. So I had to hurry up and get on the phone immediately to get those first class tickets to a chess tournament in Norway. And listen, this is just like when, you know, you have to know when you want the best of anything, you have to act quickly or someone else will get it instead. And I did not want those seats to fill up. So it's like if you're hiring for your business, you want to find the most talented people for your open roles before the competition scoops them up. I just was talking to a friend this morning where he was trying to decide between some programmers and he waited a little too long and both the programmers he was interviewing took other jobs, like great jobs. So, you know, what's the best way then to hire the best as quickly as possible? ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast. And right now you can try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/James. Just try it and see. You'll find out. So ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify the top talent for your roles. Immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. And I know this because one time I signed up as an employee, potential employee on ZipRecruiter, and I got nonstop. Really, I was, even though obviously I wasn't looking for a job, I love what I do, but I just wanted to see what would happen because they were a sponsor of my podcast. And the most interesting jobs would pop up in my emails like, hey, you're qualified for this or that. And so it's interesting to see. So just go there and try it. Try ZipRecruiter.com/James. Amp up your hiring performance. Now, this is more for if you're hiring, but amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/James. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/James. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
At the UPS Store, we know things can get busy this upcoming holiday. You can count on us to be open and ready to help with any packing and shipping or anything else you might need.
Is there anything you can't do?
Actually, I don't have a good singing voice. The UPS... Nope. But our certified packing experts can pack and ship just about anything.
At least that's good.
The UPS Store. Be unstoppable. Most locations are independently owned. Product, services, pricing, and hours of operation may vary. See center for details. Come in today to get your holiday goodies there on time.
I'll tell you a situation where it's worked with my kids. So my oldest daughter, unfortunately, goes to college. And I was very much against it. I've even written a book, 40 Alternatives to College. And I've written a ton of articles about student loan debt and so forth. But Whenever I used to try to talk to her about it, she would literally, if I would say to her, listen, we got to talk about college and your alternatives, she would just literally turn around and walk away. And so I had to change the way I talked to her about it. And I had to say, look, give me advice on how I can talk to you about education.
Yeah.
Like, what would be a way where you wouldn't walk away? And so even though it did end up that she was going to college, we were able to have many discussions about it, and she's always aware of her alternatives. So, and it also gives her, you know, fuel for her to talk to me about it if she has problems in school or whatever. So,
made you do that? Were you at the end, at your wit's end?
No. I realized, look, she's an adult, and when she's 28 or 29 years old and having a serious problem, as opposed to whether or not she should go, I mean, going to college is a serious issue, I think, but the older you get, the more serious the issues you could have. I want her to feel comfortable talking to me. I didn't want her to think I was her enemy, but if I said, no, you can't go to college, and then she was just miserable and hated me. So at some point, your kids are adults, and they need to make decisions for themselves, but I still wanted to have the conversation with her so she'd at least know my opinion.
Yeah.
And that was a high stakes enough for me that I used the advice hack. It only really works in high stakes situations.
Yes, but I've been in situations where you were in a negotiation and with people at work, and they have to. I think it works when both people have stakes. It's when Adam Grant talks about, you know, when you're dealing with a giver or taker, or it works when you have a giver and a giver, when, you know, and that's instructive too. You either win or you learn, and you may learn who you're sitting across the table from, and that person isn't worthy of you doing a deal. If they're not going to be forthcoming, if they're not going to see it as a win-win,
right? If someone
you
says,
don't want to deal with them. Yeah.
If someone says, oh, don't try the advice hack on me, I just heard you talk about it on a podcast, you could say the truth, which is I legitimately want to learn. Like, that's why I'm negotiating with you. You're the person who's the expert. So I want to sell my company. You know, I'm making that scenario up.
And you know, doesn't mean it has to be duplicitous or oily on your part. And it's not unlike with King Solomon, where one person, you know, you'll find out who wants more in any kind of negotiation. And that's what you want. You want somebody who cares the same way you do. And so they should want you to do well in that deal, or to be fair. And you're not, you know, you might be in a way coming underestimating your acuity when you're dealing with somebody saying you're the grandmaster, you know, to that person. But I think you're savvy enough to know if somebody's giving you a deal that's not kosher for you.
So, it doesn't have to be Machiavellian. Like, Benjamin Franklin's use of it seemed Machiavellian a little bit, but it could be a sincere, you know, forthcoming.
Yeah, of course. I think it can be, of course.
And it's use of the word language. Again, it's the use of language. Like, advice implies, you know, if you're going to be working with somebody or dealing with someone in a high-stakes situation, it's not like you versus them. Saying the word advice implies you're working together.
In the words of Pitbull, the rapper, just much like Ice Cube was the rapper, not like the accountant, he says, ask for money and get advice. Ask for advice, get money twice. So there is a way.
You know, that's good. Pitbull had the advice hack.
Yeah, exactly. You probably taught it to him, or Warren Buffett.
So this next hack I've totally violated today, but I explained my reason why. But there's a deeper nuance to this hack, but the hack is called leave the smartphone at home, which I have my smartphone right here. But I've been doing this for almost 2 months now. Yuval Harari was on the podcast, and Yuval Harari wrote Sapiens. He wrote Homo Deus. He wrote 21 Lessons for the 21st Century. And one of the smartest people we've ever had the opportunity to have on the podcast. And one thing I thought was interesting is he didn't have a smartphone on him. And you know, he gave a bunch of reasons. Like I said, what if you had to meet somebody? And he said, well, we'll arrange to meet and then meet. You know, it's not like, you know, show up at 2:30 and we'll just text each other. You become much more concise about your plans. And then the other thing is
we ever do it before cell phones?
Right, and he kind of implied, which I then researched further, he kind of implied, well, the obvious, which is smartphones are not productivity enhancers. They're productivity wasters in most cases.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, you think they're enhancers because, oh, while you're in a cab, you could be answering emails and responding to things and you get a lot more done. But so for a month and a half or 2 months, I've been not carrying the smartphone around. And even though I'm carrying it around today as a mobile hotspot, yeah. I don't actually use it as a
Listen, one smartphone. Murder, you're not Tech the Ripper.
But I have, you've seen me not carrying it around.
100%.
And I find two things. One is, so there's three things. The third is the research. But the two things I've noticed personally is that I'm able to read and think a lot more. So like if I'm in a cab, usually the other person's looking at their phone, like just whipping through Instagram, and I'm reading a book or thinking about things or looking outside or yeah. working on my waiter's pad or whatever. The other thing I've noticed is that when I get home, it's not like I then, you know, spend 4 hours on my email. I'll go to the email. I'll see there's three emails. I'll see within seconds, there's three emails I have to respond to. I'll respond to all three, and that's my email time. Because I haven't been spending yeah. all those hours checking email, checking email, checking email, checking Instagram, checking Twitter, checking Facebook.
Well, I'd say it's two things is, you know, sometimes we confuse activity with accomplishment and we're just busy and we're trying to do stuff just to do it. And we're so used to doing it. And I remember I was listening to something the other day and they talked about how anything will get our attention, like with your phone or any stimulus, if it's new, if it's threatening, or if it's pleasurable. You know, and that's one of those three things will kind of wake us from our stupor or distract us. And I think the people who need to get in touch with you know where you are and, you know.
Or even like if, you know, there's always a worst case scenario. What if one of your kids is hit by yeah. a car and is in the hospital? Well, she's already been hit by the car. I know this sounds awful, but she's already been hit by the car. I can't stop her from being hit by the
yeah.
car. And having the cell phone usually won't get me there that much faster to get upstate.
Sure.
So it'll just make me worry more and be more anxious. I guess if there's a life-threatening decision I have to make, but that's never happened in my life, actually. So the odds of that are very small. And usually I'm not really that, I mean, usually I'm home. I work at home, so usually I'm yeah. not that far. So in my home, I'll use my cell phone, but just not outside of my home.
Yeah, I think it's great. I mean, I haven't been successful in adopting that plan, but I think maybe another hack I thought was really instructive was when people say if you're going to take on a new activity, whether it's working out or doing stuff that you don't maybe like that much, maybe just try a very small interval of it. You know, so if I'm addicted to my phone and you know, I heard somebody the other day talk about, like, if you wake up and you drink whiskey, people are going to think you're an alcoholic. Like, you know, there's a pejorative of, like, you're waking up at 8 in the morning, but everybody does that with their phones. So I do think there's some merit to the idea that people are addicted to technology or have fear of missing something. But what I was going to say is just maybe try for an hour a day or 2 hours. I mean, we, as you've said, like, check your phone 260 times a day. And
right, so that's the other thing. Yeah. So I did the research, and you just said people on the average check their phone 260 times a day. That's not the answer. People, well, this is different than checking, but people touch their cell phones 2,600 times a day.
Yeesh.
And the average American spends 4 hours and 40 minutes every day
wow.
on their cell phone. Now, I spend time on my cell phone every day as well, but at home. If I'm out,
yeah.
I probably save myself 2 hours a day. Now, but you bring up something interesting, which is, and this relates to the other nuance to this life hack. For all of our podcasts, we're talking to the smartest, most successful people in the world. So I try to always get a takeaway that I then research on my own to see if it works
yeah,
or not.
Absolutely.
But I try to get at least, you know, a couple of takeaways or at least one from each guest. And it really, you know, I'm not a journalist. I want this podcast to improve my life. And that's why we have the guests that we have. That's why we always
yeah.
talk about the guests. Like, will this guest improve my life? And will it improve the listeners' lives? So as an example, we had on Aubrey Marcus, the CEO
yeah.
of Onnit. He recommended every morning, and he gave some scientific research, take cold showers, like freezing cold, ice cold showers. Put it on the icest temperature possible. So I do that every morning, and it's
I
still do it.
You're
on
your own there.
I did it today. Yeah. I still do it. He recommended take a full glass of water, take an ice cold shower, and do 25 push-ups. So first thing when I wake up, I do those three things every day.
Do you feel better from doing?
I don't know, but I do them.
But you feel. I think you feel. You might not feel physically better, but you feel.
It's hard to know how you would have felt otherwise, but I think I feel more alert in the morning as a result.
Keep a commitment to your commitment.
Yeah,
you know. So good for you. You're on your own there, but I mean, I think there are certain things I don't necessarily need to do. I mean, I shower once a week, whether I need to or not. But I think that that's a tough one. Yeah,
and you know, we've had on Arianna Huffington talking about sleep, and she mentions how even having the cell phone next to your bed, even if it's off, worsens your ability to sleep. And you know, she has so much research about how important sleep is. I mean, it's a life or death thing. The quality of your sleep, you'll actually live longer lifespan just if you sleep more deeply. So I've started plugging in. You know, I used to read, because I didn't have any books, because I was minimalist, I was carrying around without any books. I used to read on the Kindle on my phone, and then I would just plug the phone in when I went to sleep. But now I plug the phone in another room, so it's not even there when I wake up. It's not there in the middle of the night. There's no temptation to check it at like 2 in the morning. There's no glow from it. So that was the takeaway from that one, that I don't, but that was a way to kind of start weaning myself off phone. Then another person suggested, I forget who, take off all the apps on the phone. So if I go on Twitter, I don't have the Twitter app. I just go on Twitter via the Chrome app on the phone. So that started to save time on my phone. I'm not instinctively getting Twitter notifications and then checking Twitter. You know, I got rid of all the games, all the apps, everything. And then Tony Robbins, a takeaway, bring the target closer. So he was using that to explain how he taught Marines how to shoot better. Okay, don't start them off shooting targets 100 feet away. Start them off shooting targets 5 feet away. So it's like what you said. Okay, maybe one out of 2 days I won't, or if I'm just taking a walk around the block, I'm not going to bring my cell phone with me.
Yeah.
And you build up. Or, you know, what I did was, and this is a takeaway from Tim Ferriss, don't commit long-term to a habit change. Do it as commit to an experiment for a week. So the Yuval Harari thing, I said, okay, I'll do an experiment for 1 week. And it's turned into, you know, 6 or 7 weeks later, or maybe even more, where I don't really bring the smartphone out unless it's targeted use as a mobile hotspot. So it's important to kind of get all these different takeaways from the different podcasts. They're not here just for, I like them to be entertaining, but I want to improve my life with each one. These are the smartest people on the planet. I'd be stupid not to listen to something they say.
No, and I'll say it's been a year in and a little, like probably 13 months, and I've learned a ton of stuff from all of our guests, and that's why we're doing this. You know, we want to improve the lives of other people. We want to improve our own lives, and And so speaking about that, like, listeners, if you have any advice for us, we're more than happy to take it.
Oh, yeah. If someone wants to tweet out life hacks or post life hacks in the Facebook Choose Yourself community, which is a great community, post away. This is, or on Instagram, I'll post all of these as well. So follow me on Instagram at Altucher. But enough self-promotion. Let's get on to the next hack. And this one comes from another podcast guest, Robert Cialdini. It's the because hack. Did you know this hack at all before reading Robert Cialdini?
I did not know it before Robert Cialdini.
So basically, there was a couple of experiments. And the first experiment was, if you say, I don't know the specific example to use. If you say, give me that book versus give me that book because it'll benefit you a lot. The person who says, give me that book because it'll benefit you a lot is much more likely to get the book from you.
Sure.
But then it turned out something really interesting. If you say, give me that book because you're giving me that book. So that's called placebo information. You're not actually adding anything to the after the because. It's really the same information content as just give me that book.
Yeah.
But you'll have the exact same results as wow. the person who says, give me that book because it'll be of great benefit to you.
Wow.
So it's the word because somehow triggers something in the brain that automatically makes you want to do something. And there's, I don't think they know why that works.
I imagine.
And it's a huge statistically significant result.
And I'm sure part of it's the Pavlovian response. You hear because, and even when the kid says, well, why can't I go? Because, I mean, but I also think you're conditioned because you expect most people to have a logical conclusion. And a corollary to that is when you go into stores and they have, we're so conditioned to say sale, and it might be 10 cents lower and you'll buy it. Or it could, they've shown stuff where it's a sale and the price is higher and people buy it. So sale is a trigger, because is a trigger. And
I wonder what the research is on sale. I wonder if that actually does.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I know when we do advertising for products, discounts work, but I don't know if that's just because it's cheaper or because people feel like they're getting a bargain. I don't know what the answer is.
I think, I remember this guy, and I did this once when I was in college, and he wrote something in the LA Times, and he said, he just had this ad, and it said, this guy, Leo Rostin, who wrote The Joys of Yiddish and other things, and one time he put in the LA Times, he put this classified ad for Craigslist, eviscerated all everybody else's ads. Thanks for giving money to journalism, Craig. Very nice of you. Former guest on the podcast, right? Did we hit Craig Newmark?
No.
We didn't. Well, future guest.
We tried.
Craig, you'll come. Thanks for giving $20 million to NYU. But he, in the LA Times, it said, last day to send in dollar. And it didn't say why, and people sent in dollar because there was an urgency and there was a time limit, and people always have fear of missing something.
I think I've heard about this. How much did they send in?
I think thousands. I mean, thousands of people sent it. Now, yes, maybe P.T. Barnum was right, the sucker board every minute, but I think there are triggers, and there are a lot of things that make people do things that they're doing. And, I mean, Cialdini's got a million of them in his book, you know, and you had done a great interview with him. You know, so I definitely think so. Like you're in a store, you're listening to your headphones, you're distracted, you're checking your phone, you see sale, and you're like, okay, because you want to feel good about yourself for doing something. That's why we do it. Like, it's why do we do any habit? Because it's pleasurable, and it's as much the idea of you feeling like you saved money rather than the actual saving of the money. Like, is a dollar or two on paper towels going to mean as much to you? But hey, you feel like, I'm the kind of person who looks for sales. I'm the kind of person who gets value.
Or maybe with the because hack, I'm the type of person who needs a rational reason.
Sure.
Even though basically, and this is a takeaway from both Robert Greene and Scott Adams, basically most of our behaviors, and actually, who else talked about this recently? I think Yuval Harari, actually. There's sort of this myth that we have total free will when reality is, we're mostly irrational and ruled by all these biases. So you might as well understand these, you know, so-called laws of human nature or cognitive biases or whatever. But the because one is interesting. So if someone says, you want a promotion? Why should I give you a promotion? You have two choices. You could say, well, I did this, 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 and this. Or you could say, you should give me a promotion because I did this, this, and this. You'll have this hack shows you'll have better results by taking the second approach, making sure you can fit the because in the sentence.
Yeah.
And then I'll just say with Robert Cialdini, one of the most, just as since we're listing takeaways of podcast guests, the most important takeaway I get from him, other than the because hack, is listing the objections. So if you're trying to sell something, or let's say in the case of why should I give you a promotion, if you say the objections before the other side says them,
sure.
So you might say, well, here are some reasons why you might not give me an objection. I have less seniority.
Right.
I have, I just got promoted 2 weeks ago. I just had a baby, so I won't be working. You know, you can list all the objections and then you answer them. And the important thing is he's thinking, you're the other side, he or she is thinking anyway, what the objections are. If you bring them up before they address them, then it comes off, and it is, in fact, sincere and honest and authentic, and it shows you're thinking about all the issues. And then there's nothing they can say to argue with you when they're trying to come up with an argument about why they shouldn't give you the promotion.
Yeah, and I do that sometimes if I'm reaching out for people to come on our podcast, and I'll say, know it seems crazy. I know it seems delusional, but hey, you know, if you don't ask, the answer is always no. And people appreciate it. Or, hey, if we could help you to do it. Like, I've had people, in, you know, as a producer, reach out to me and they didn't seem aware. And it was always the old joke, like, I'd like a book on chutzpah and I want you to pay for it. You know, they didn't have an understanding of what you wanted. So I do think it's disarming. You're disarming their attack for you. Moron, you've been here 2-3 weeks. Why should you need a promotion? But I think it's disarming and shows awareness.
And if you say before you answer yes or no to the promotion, let me, you know, I know I've only been here 3 weeks, but already I blah 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 blah, and you give your plan, you know, and you list, you give your answer the objections first. By the way, for more on this, we just made a video. If you search on YouTube, Altucher and Eminem, you'll see the YouTube how Eminem uses cognitive biases to win rap battles. We talk about
really,
the list.
It was really a great video, and you and Jay did a fantastic job.
You couldn't find a joke about Jay. I saw you reaching for a joke about Jay, but you couldn't quite find one.
I wanted to leave a tender moment alone. Like, I didn't want to, you know, I just think it's not as effective if every single time I insult Jay. No, I thought it was really terrific. It's like, also, sometimes you have to give an unalloyed compliment. Like, you just have to say, yeah, it was really good. And, like, you know, just appreciate, you know, excellent. So I thought it was really great, and I was proud to be involved with it.
This is part two of our life hacks. Check out the part one, which was the last podcast, or within the last week or so. And if you have any life hacks, again, share them with us on the Facebook Choose Yourself group, or follow me on Instagram and share it, or share with me on Twitter. And again, I don't like the word life hacks. It sounds kind of cheesy, like, oh, if I do this, I'm going to manipulate all these people. But I do think there is something to be said for optimizing, making little tweaks to optimize your life, to make it a little better. And there are people who've had a lot of experience at different types of ways of living life. And if you can benefit in small ways from that, then do it.
I was just going to say, I liked, for example, like a couple of life hacks, you know, that I've gotten from our podcast. I remember when you had Mike Massimino on, he talked about when he was an astronaut, or if something went wrong, he would say, I'm only going to ruminate on it for 3 minutes or 5 minutes or whatever it was. And I think that's helpful.
Yeah.
I know Mel Robbins has said as much, a 5-second rule. And I have a tendency to perseverate on things and roll around in the mud. And you don't get clean rolling around in the mud. You get clean getting out of it. And so I think that I would like to think, like, every guest we've had, like, we've gotten something valuable, but I remember that being very insightful, you know, for all of us to say, okay, you know, we screwed up, you know, and, you know, so I definitely think that was very helpful.
I'm trying to think what else I've got. I mean, I've gotten so many things from our guests. It's ridiculous at this
point.
We
like Amy Morin. I mean, Amy Morin.
I think, by the way, when you say the word perseverate, yeah. Amy Morin used the word perseverate.
Oh, she did? Oh, wow.
That's like the first time I ever heard that word.
Oh, really?
This is the second time I've heard that word. So I'm going to have to use it. That's my takeaway here, is I'm going to use the word perseverate means, I guess, thinking a lot about something.
Yeah.
I have never heard that word before, and now I've heard it twice in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
All right, well.
Thanks a lot, James. Yeah.
Well, once again, Steve, welcome to the podcast. Steve
thank
Cohen,
you.
Podcast producer extraordinaire. And if you like these podcast hacks, or life hacks rather, or these podcasts about life hacks, subscribe to the podcast, follow me on Instagram, tweet at us some new life hacks. We'll do another podcast about this down the road, and we're constantly keeping track of what we learn from our guests, so we'll always be able to summarize. And that's it. Thanks once again.
Thank you. See you soon. Good stuff.
This is a big year. The Ohio Lottery's golden anniversary. 50 years of excitement, of growing jackpots and crossed fingers. 50 years of funding for schools, of changed lives and brightened days. 50 years of fun. And that is worth celebrating. So watch for can't-miss promotions, huge events, and new games that will make the Ohio Lottery's 50th year its biggest one yet. Learn more at funturns50.com.